It's cool story, cool story. The Wheel of Time, the ultimate fantasy. It's cool story, cool story.
Good evening.
Well, good. I was going to do some, like, medieval greeting thing at you, and then my brain failed to come up with any words that would have been from that period.
From olden times.
Pleasant good evening to you. Yes.
Good morrow.
Good morrow. Did you know, by the way, that goodbye is an abbreviation of God be with you?
Are you serious?
I'm not kidding. I learned that, like, last year.
Is that true? Like a true thing?
It was a... like an abbreviation in a letter where it was like God B W Y E, and it kind of like turned into like goodbye.
Oh, wow. Well,
but yeah, it means God be with you.
There you go.
So I shall begin saying farewell.
So long.
So long. Auf Wiedersehen.
Okay, Heidi Klum.
What does Auf Wiedersehen mean? I know it means like goodbye, but does it translate to something like, I hope you're well until I see you next time or something?
I mean, if you think I have any knowledge of the Germanic language, you've got a serious mistake.
The minute the question came out of my mouth, I was like, I don't know why I'm asking that this question.
I'm not even offended.
Speaking of things we don't know that we are to be corrected about, we have some items from Pythos.
Oh, yay. Okay.
Okay, so there was an episode, I think it was like two episodes ago, but it was the episode where we talked about mutton.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
Which I think is the Perrin and Jara chapters, mm-hmm. like right around there, right?
Yeah.
So mutton is the meat from a mature sheep, usually 2 years and older, while lamb is meat from a sheep under a year old, the same way that veal is meat from calves, while beef is from adult cows.
Oh, so it's swapped.
So I guess anytime you say I'm eating lamb, it's technically a sheep under a year old.
Okay. That was the opposite of what I thought.
And then turnips are root vegetables, which are closer related to radishes and mustard plants than they are carrots.
Mm-hmm. That's a correction
even though I said,
to
I think
you.
They're just like carrots. That's a correction for me, for sure. Here's one for you.
Ooh.
There actually is a blue raspberry plant, though it's more the color of blackberries than true blue. And the blue raspberry flavor came from an Italian ice company in the 1950s who dyed the flavor blue to distinguish it from the red cherry flavor.
Oh.
Fun fact.
Oh, okay. So it was like raspberry, but they just dyed it blue.
Yes, to distinguish it from red cherry.
Interesting. Okay.
And I had asked if there were any gray foods out there. I don't remember why we're... Oh, I described lamb and mutton as gray. And there are other gray foods, including mushrooms, which I mentioned, truffles, and some forms of caviar and dragon fruit, and oysters.
Oysters.
So there you go. There are some gray foods.
Oh, I love oysters.
By the way, the Black Widow movie has not been canceled. It's been pushed back several times due to the pandemic, but is currently finished and slated to come out in May of 2020.
Oh, good. It's about time.
The more you know. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Pythos, for not only listening to probably a solid 30 minutes of us talking about food, but then remembering the questions and telling us the answers. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Do you have any items?
Oh, you know what we watched recently?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen The Black Coat's Daughter? It's a sort of a horror movie.
No. No, I'm not a horror movie person.
Oh, that's right. Okay. We watched it recently. I actually don't think you'd like it because I don't think you like the actresses in it. Emma Roberts.
Is it Scarlett Johansson?
No. Do you like Emma Roberts?
Emma Roberts.
You know, Scream Queens, Julia Roberts' niece, always plays the bitchy character.
I'm thinking
character.
Of Emma Thompson, and I was like, yes, I like Emma Thompson. Who is
Emma Roberts? Is in Coven, and she's like, surprise, bitch, but she plays Madison Montgomery in Coven.
I know the meme, the surprise bitch meme, but I do not think I recognize her from anything.
Did you watch American Horror Story Coven?
No, ironically, oh, wow. I've only ever watched Hotel, the season with Gaga.
Oh, wow. That's shocking. I feel like Coven would be the one you would probably like most.
I know. I think that I never cared about it because it's horror-esque, and then I saw Lady Gaga was going to be in it, and I was like, sure, I'll watch this, and it wasn't great. I don't like Ryan Murphy generally. I think he comes up with an idea and then
plays fingerprint right with it. Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay, what about the girl who was in Sabrina, the main character Sabrina? The new Sabrina.
Can't stand her.
Okay, she's the star. She's also in The Blackwood's Daughter, so don't see it. But I would recommend it to others. It was a very good horror film. There's some predictable moments, but there's a few cool twists in them. Highly recommend. I think it's like 4 years old, so it's not new, but that's the only thing I...
New to you.
Yeah, new to me. We watched it on Netflix, I think, last week.
Cute.
Yeah.
I don't think I've watched anything like fantastical or anything like that lately.
Oh, Davey... Okay, have you ever seen... Do you like Daniel Radcliffe?
Well, yes.
Okay. I love him.
I have very complicated Harry Potter feelings.
Have you seen... It's called Horns?
No.
It is on Netflix also, I believe. It's a Daniel Radcliffe movie where... This isn't a spoiler, but he's, like, growing horns. But he's in real world, like, a real world situation. So he's a regular dude, but he's growing horns.
Okay.
And it's fantastical, but also grounded in reality. It's kind of, like, skirts the line. You know what I mean? Like, he encounters...
It's a genre-crossing film like Sliding Doors.
Exactly that.
Great.
I would recommend it, though. It was funny. It was interesting.
Did you just watch that, too?
We watched that, like, 2 weeks ago. But that is, I feel like, more linked to this podcast. Because it's sort of, like, fantasy. It is fantasy. It's very grounded in that kind of thing. It's also a little true crimey, actually.
Okay. And it's a movie, not a TV show.
Yeah. It's just a movie.
Oh. Well, you know, I never watch movies. I'm trying to get better. Me watching the Britney Spears documentary, which was literally just a TV episode, was a big step for me in, like, watching a movie type thing.
What did we watch together that you didn't love? Oh, Witches. If we can sit through the Witches reboot.
Oh, God.
Go watch a movie. Even though I liked that.
I mean, I can... I've sat through some bad movies. Here's the thing. I develop... emotional attachment to characters after spending a lot of time with them, like anybody does when you read a book and you're sad that it's over kind of thing. I find that just at the time that I'm starting to care about these characters, like the movie's over, and then I never see them again unless it's part of like a sequel or ongoing series. And that just seems like a lot of emotional investment for me to start to care about a character and then never see them again. I'd rather do that with a TV show that's going to be on for like 10 seasons.
I can understand that. That makes sense to me.
Thank you. Thank you for validating my feelings. Well, should we get into it then?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm ready. These were so good, these chapters.
I mean... I love this book because there are a lot more Nynaeve and Egwene chapters than the previous books. And so we get more of their character, we get more of their character development, and they kind of, you know, I feel like in book one, we're seeing the characters, like the book, all of the book one characters really are less complex in the beginning, and we've had less time to build the complexity of Nynaeve and Egwene so far. And one of the things I like most about this book, and especially the next book, is we get a lot of Nynaeve and Egwene character development.
Oh, that's exciting. This book has a very different tone, because the first book, and a lot of the second book, it's very much climbing uphill the whole time, it feels like. It's always this, like, struggle uphill, and it's these people who are so far out of their league, just sort of making it work, getting lucky, you know, the wheel is controlling everything, and they're just kind of along for the ride. And I feel like this book has a little bit more of, like, some of the other characters coming into their own. Maybe it's because it's their viewpoints, it's Perrin and Egwene and Nynaeve, essentially, so far.
Yeah.
And it's not like Rand, who's always struggling. But yeah, it feels very different. I feel like they're growing. They're growing right before our eyes.
I think part of it is like you said, the wheel was weaving very strongly in the first book and second book. And this book does start to feel like, for all of the characters, that they're developing a little bit more agency in choosing their destiny. They're moving into choose-your-own-adventure territory. There's also an element of the dangers are becoming more... Like, there's less, like, danger... like ambiguous danger lurking in the background, and more like specific danger of we're hunting Black Aja. You know, I have a attempt on my life, blah, 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 blah. You know, it like it's getting less we're fighting a big bad evil and more we're having to fight the ways that evil shows up in the world.
Yeah.
If that makes
sense. Yeah, exactly. And it's also less of, oh, we're heading somewhere. They're dangerous. There's things dangerous to come, and more like, oh, it's right here in front of your face. It's all around you.
Yes.
You're here. Welcome. Welcome to hell.
So, you are first.
I am. This is chapter 15, and it's titled The Gray Man, and it has those little male head, helmeted head silhouettes facing each other, the black and the white, and those are...
It's so funny you say that those are male heads. I've never really assigned a gender to them, but I always felt like they were women.
Really?
That's
I think they look like knights differently to me.
Yeah.
Like helmets.
Yeah, I think... You know, there's that like kind of curly bob on the side that I always sort of interpreted as hair, but you're right. It does kind of look like a helmet. Interesting.
See, to me, it looks like the brim of a helmet.
It does. Yeah. It's kind of like, do you see Batman's kissing or a vase?
Exactly that.
Yeah.
So this icon is, I believe, usually for the Black Aja. But it's only the second time I've seen it, so.
Oh, maybe. And maybe that's why I interpreted it more as women. And because it does seem to be, from what we've seen so far, primarily used to reference the Black Aja.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's kind of what the website says, the Black Aja.
Which is why I feel like it's weird that it would be men. But I don't know. Maybe it's not men.
Maybe it's some kind of head garb, like a diadem or something.
Maybe that, like... little curve is like the curve of a snake, and it's like around their head, and it's like long head hair. I don't know. Anyone know out there?
Yeah. I would be interested to hear people's interpretation of the faces icon that, according to this JC Salomon GitHub.io website where I end up whenever I Google the chapter icons, it says that's for the Black Aja. So. Tell us your interpretations of that.
Yeah, I actually am curious to
see
what...
Do you see Batman kissing?
Is an old lady or a beautiful... Anyway, okay.
Or a rabbit. Is it a beautiful princess or an old man?
Anyway, it's the gray man. That's what it is. When I saw the chapter name, I was like, oh, I wonder if this is going to be cool, like the green man. No. Not exactly.
I mean, it's cool.
It's interesting so far.
But not like the green man.
Yeah, not yet. I hope we find more out, but let me not get ahead of myself. So,
also, the gray man absolutely sounds like it could be the name of an inn in one of the small towns that they kind of trot through.
I would agree, but now finding out what the gray man is, that's not an inn I'd like to stay at.
Absolutely not.
So, despite this being about Black Aja, it's an Egwene chapter, and it starts out with she and Nynaeve headed towards the novice quarters after being told their top secret mission from the Amyrlin. And Nynaeve is auditioning for My Strange Addiction, and her trichotillomania is acting up, so she's pulling her braid feverishly throughout the whole chapter.
How did you know that word?
Trichotillomania?
Yeah.
It's been so... I think I heard it on a TV show when I was younger, and it's an interesting sounding word, so I remembered it.
How funny. Yeah, Nynaeve is quite the hair puller. She doesn't go around pulling other people's hair. She kind of just does it to herself.
And they are on their way, and they're sort of, you know, chatting about what just went down. And Egwene says, okay, I hope everything you said back there was an act, because if it comes down to life or death, like, you better believe I'm going to channel. I'm not going to do the whole three oath thing you said. And
if I'm given the choice of cake or death, I'm going to pick cake.
Is that a real thing?
Did you ever watch Eddie Izzard or Eddie Izzard?
Like the comedian?
He has an amazing whole line about cake or death. I'm not going to tell it.
Well, I'm going to look it up. I don't know if I remember. Is his comedy good?
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, I haven't seen anything new from him in literally probably more than 15 years. His special was called Dressed to Kill, was the first one I saw him in. And it is so, so funny. And I owned multiple of his stand-up shows on DVD because they were so good. Like, he's definitely, And I saw him live. And I always say that I think in order to be like a real true comedian who really, really understands humor, you have to be pretty smart, because you have to know, not only like know a bunch of things, but also be able to like pull things together in creative ways and often very fast ways. And he has, I'm sure somebody out there is going to disagree with me on this, but he went on this whole thing about, because we live in Santa Barbara, he talked about Saint Barbara and she was the patron saint of cannonballs or something like that. And he did this whole bit about Saint Barbara, and he does all of these really impressive jokes about history and puts that into his stand-up in really funny ways. So I highly, highly, highly recommend Dressed to Kill. Again, I haven't seen it in probably 12 years, so I can't say if there's anything that I would be like, ooh, now.
Uh-huh.
And also, my partner, Miles, just interrupted me to let me know that Izzard has transitioned and uses she, her pronouns. So apologies. I will correct that going forward. Yeah. Anyway,
do they have a different preferred name now? I feel like my brother actually liked Eddie Izzard. I feel like that's how I first heard of her. I feel like most things I liked growing up, I first heard from my brother, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it looks like just pronouns to she, her, but still going by Eddie.
Okay.
Awesome.
Back.
I don't know why I got there.
I was happy you got there.
That was my long tangent.
So Nynaeve is not down for dying. She's down for channeling. Oh, not Nynaeve. I'm sorry. Egwene is the one.
That's right.
Egwene is not down for dying. She's down for channeling. And she hopes Nynaeve feels the same. And Nynaeve says, well, listen, we don't really have much of a choice but to probably defend ourselves when we need to, because the Black Aja, once we're near them, it's going to be plain as day what we're doing. They're going to know what we're up to. And Egwene is like, well, I don't think so, because, you know, we're being punished. They can still boss us around. We're not even Aes Sedai. So who's going to be, like,
right,
caring about... We don't pose a threat to anybody. But Nynaeve is very clever, or suspicious, or both. And
yep.
She notes that Leandrin wanted them gone before, very badly, obviously. And this was, of course, before they knew about the Black Aja being real, before anything was out there. So they're already, for some reason that she's not sure about, they're already a threat. So if they're around a Black someone of the Black Aja, they're probably aware of the two of them already, and they're going to be hyper aware of them if they try to channel, and Aes Sedai will see it, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what it was that made them a threat exactly to Leandrin. And I'm wondering, is it just that they had like the link to Taverin is so strong and everybody knows that they're sort of connected to them? Or I'm wondering if the Black Aja, because they've talked about Aes Sedai of the past being able to have talents for foretelling. And we know that, you know, Min has her own ability. So I'm wondering if someone on that squad was able to see that somehow Egwene and Nynaeve were going to be hunting the Black Aja. I don't know. I wonder why they were as big of a threat right from the jump to the Black Aja.
I think that I can't answer that until we read a couple more books,
okay,
and especially until we read the prologue, New Spring.
Okay.
But your suppositions, I think, are in the right direction.
Okay, cool. I'm excited. I love when you can't tell me yet. Weirdly enough. Okay, so she goes on to say, oh, and by the way, I'm totally serious. I'm gonna follow the three oaths. I'm not kidding, and sorry, which shocks me and Egwene. Like, why are you gonna limit yourself? Because we've had no limits this whole time, and now all of a sudden, in the words of Dorinda Medley, don't be all coquettish. Like, why are we all gonna be timid now? And Nynaeve says, listen, we need to remain in the tower. We need to be safe here, and we cannot be stilled. And then it says, I just wanted to read the quote. It says that Nynaeve says, I can do it. I must, if I'm to stay here long enough to learn, and I must learn if I'm to... Suddenly, she seemed to realize she was speaking aloud. She shot a hard look at Egwene, and her voice firmed. Let me think. Please be quiet and let me think. Egwene held her tongue, but inside she bubbled with unasked questions. What special reason did Nynaeve have for wanting to learn more of what the White Tower could teach? What was it she wanted to do? And why was Nynaeve keeping secrets from her? And I thought, ooh,
What are your guesses to those questions?
Well, I feel like it's kind of weird to me that she feels like this is some kind of big secret, because if it's what I'm thinking, it's not much. Like, Nynaeve has made it very clear that she wants to be around the Aes Sedai because she doesn't trust them, especially Moiraine. And she said a million mm-hmm. times that, like, Moiraine can't be trusted. It was only, like, a chapter ago that she was like, oh, Moiraine, I don't know if she's to be trusted. So I feel like she's just trying to keep an eye on the Aes Sedai, learn enough to become as powerful as she possibly can be, and then she has, like, you know, something in her corner. If anything ever happens with Moiraine, she's prepared, you know, or if anything happens with any Aes Sedai, mm-hmm. she's ready to, she doesn't like to be told what to do. So I feel like that's her ulterior motive. Mm-hmm. So,
okay.
I don't know, but that's kind of what I'm getting from this. But now Egwene is starting to wonder, and she starts to think, like, oh, things have changed so much, and the Amyrlin is telling us secrets, and Nynaeve is keeping secrets. Like, this is not great. And they go to meet Elaine. They're going on their way to meet Elaine, and when they get to their rooms, Elaine isn't there, and they're about to talk, and suddenly Egwene feels something graze past her ear, and she's like, oh, what was that? Oh, okay. No, I'm bleeding. And it seems a bolt has gone past her face from a crossbow and zipped past, cutting a little bit of her hair. Rude. And she's bleeding from her ear now. It seems from the way to trajectory of it, it almost essentially killed her and Nynaeve in one fell swoop from the ankle. Mm-hmm. And Nynaeve is like, get down, knocks her to the ground, basically, and they both start channeling to figure out who is in the room that did this. Who is it? And Nynaeve senses presence in the room, and she's able to seize him in his place using the power of air by channeling it. And she goes on to say, like, a cute little line about how air is usually the most, like, discounted element of the five, but she saw its usefulness right away when the Amyrlin used it on her in a previous chapter, and she just picked up the skill secretly. And I agree about these elements. I always, every game, every TV show, fantasy thing, I always loved the air magic users the most.
I only agree if it gave them the power to fly. If it didn't, then who cares? But, like, Storm was always my favorite X-Men. You know, the blonde chick on
Captain Planet.
I think she could fly them in, like, a big tornado, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I think it was not.
So if it gave flight powers, hard yes. But then if not, I'm going to pick water.
Okay. I will always pick air first. I think water is, I don't know, water's like second place for me, I guess.
If you could do any of the bending from Avatar, which would you pick?
Ooh. Okay, me and Davey have discussed this at length before. And you know us, we're ridiculous. So we're like, well, does that include, like, the secondary bending? Like the blood bending and then the metal bending?
Right. The metal bending,
if we're
lightning.
Keep it simple. And I'm just doing, like, of the normal skills, I would say probably airbending. But if it was more, like, fleshed out, I would probably say waterbender.
Yeah, I think I would pick water too, if only for the healing magic that it comes with. I think that would be pretty handy.
I think that would be so cool. I'm tempted to do earth because I really like the metal bending, and I like the earth bending, like, characters in the show a lot.
Oh my god, Toph is one of my favorite characters on that show.
Right? Oh my god. So Egwene also mentions that she's noticed that Nynaeve has been very apt to picking up skills. She really kind of just needs to be there when it happens, and she's kind of able to figure it out, which is kind of an interesting information to learn about her here, because remember last book, I was very upset that she was able to get that Adam off of Egwene's neck, and we didn't see any of the prep work. We didn't see any of the, you know. So I'm seeing that she's, you know, very resourceful, very skilled, and she picks up really quick, it seems. So maybe that kind of helps ease that over. So she sees this guy in the air, and then they approach. He's standing there, and he is, you know, stuck in motion. He has no crossbow anywhere to be seen, unusually, but he does have another weapon, a dagger, sticking out of his body. And he is dead, standing there in the air. Someone has killed him and seemingly stole his crossbow. So why would that happen unless they were trying to hide something or to cover something up? And they kind of feel like there's someone else around they have to look out for. And suddenly Sheriam emerges and is like, what the hell happened here? And they're like, it was an accident. We found it like this, we swear. But she believes them. She realizes, like, okay, I don't know what happened here, but this is not the work of you guys. You guys are in danger. This is what we call a gray man. And they're like, what is that? And she's like, oh, okay, sorry. He's a soulless. And they're like, yeah. What is that?
What is that?
And she's like, oh, sorry, that's like a little advance for you guys. You'll learn it eventually, but it's essentially someone who surrenders their soul to serve the Dark One, and is no longer really truly alive or dead. So this is what this is what this kind young man...
this kind sir with the knife in his chest.
Who just tried to kill Egwene and Nynaeve. So this is what this guy is, and Sheriam doesn't like what any of this means, what it looks like, and she is glad that the guy was killed at least, but she says, you girls need to get to safety, so get back to your rooms. And as they leave, Egwene makes an excuse because she wants to go back for the bolt, but when she gets there, it's missing. And she's like, okay, so she's confirming that there's some sort of accomplice, or at least someone cleaning up evidence, probably another gray man, she supposes. And then Nynaeve tells her, okay, you need to be safe at all times and careful at all times, because if either of us slip even once, we could be the next one, you know, with a dagger in our chest, essentially. And yeah. As they're, like, heading off, she's like, oh, and Egwene, did you notice that Sheriam didn't wonder who killed the gray man? And then the chapter ends. Dun-dun.
What do you think about that?
Okay, Robert Jordan is usually pretty clever in his writing, and he doesn't seem to give a lot of things away. It feels too obvious to now think that Sheriam is of the Black Ajref because of this.
Okay.
But that's where it's leading me. So that's where I'm headed. I trusted Sheriam. If you remember, I think a couple chapters ago, I was like, I trust her now. So yes. I am wondering now, but I mean, who else was there? They're assuming it's a gray man. I don't think it's another gray man. I don't think they work in conjunction with each other. I think they're how they're described by Sheriam just now. I don't know. I would guess it's Sheriam who stole the bolt. I would guess it's Sheriam who took the crossbow. I would guess it's Sheriam who killed him. So,
Okay.
We'll see.
Great. Well, that brings us to chapter 16, which is called Hunters 3, and the sigil is the Lion of Andor, which you've seen before, right?
I think we've seen it. Yeah, we've seen it in the Elaine chapter.
First book, for sure,
yeah, when he falls in the garden.
Yeah, yeah. Were you laughing at something?
I was, because you said... I was almost expecting you, when you said the chapter was called Hunters 3, to make a Tribed reference. Uh-huh.
Oh, the power of Hunters 3 will set us free.
I was like, the icon is Prue Halliwell.
Like a line from like the Jabberwocky or something.
Oh. The icon for this chapter is the Halliwell family crest.
Okay, so Nynaeve and Egwene are heading toward Nynaeve's room in the accepted quarters, which when they walk in, RJ describes how they're much... or at least a fair amount larger than those of the novice quarters. They have finer furnishings, more space, and they have a nice little rug on the ground. So it's quite a step up, and Egwene describes them as luxurious compared to the novice quarters.
Must be nice. How the other half lives.
Must be nice. But the room is not empty. Inside is Elaine, who is described as looking angry, in part from anger, but also it looks like she's been crying. And we learn about that in a minute. And also, are two young men sprawled on the chairs at Nynaeve's table, which I like that he describes them as sprawled on the chairs. It kind of just sounds like they've got an arm over the back and they're manspreading like their life depends on it.
Yep, like leaning, like if they were ones leaning on like a sword hilt, like off the chair.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So these two men are Elaine's brothers. The one with the red gold hair is Gawain, and the other, described as neatly buttoned up, is her half-brother Galad. And Galad, as we might remember from the first book, is supposed to be the hottest man in the universe. I'm trying to remember who we fan-casted for Galad when we did our casting episode.
I feel like in the first season. Someone like Zac Efron or something like that. I actually have it written. Let me look. I have the note here. I don't know where it is. I'm going to have to look it up. I don't want to make you wait.
I found mine.
Okay.
And my first choice was one who I described as he's 50. So it's not going to work because Gallaud, I think, is supposed to be like 24. but Most Beautiful Man in the World award has to go to Daniel Dae Kim from Lost.
Oh, he is so handsome.
And then my second choice was Michael B. Jordan because they described Gallaud as having like the most beautiful smile in the world, which Michael B. Jordan does.
Mm-hmm.
But based on, I think, the way that they have cast some other characters, I eventually said like Timothée Chalamet as somebody for Gallaud, but I don't know. Okay, so Gallaud comes up and takes Egwene's hand and is like, we've been worried about you. And, well, he says he's been worried about her and then corrects himself to say, we've been worried about you. So Gallaud has a little crush on our girl, Eggy.
I mean, doesn't she also
have a crush on him? Oh, 100%. She tries to play it cool, but she's like blushing and, you know, feeling her pulse quickening. Actually, it's funny you say that. I wanted to read this next quote. So RJ writes, she found herself smoothing her dress, wishing he were seeing her in silk instead of this plain white wool, perhaps even one of those Domani dresses Min had told her of, the ones that clung and seemed so thin you thought they must be transparent, even though they were not. And, you know, then she's kind of like, this is why am I getting so worked up? This guy has like every girl in the world looking at him and, you know, whatever. This is never going to happen. And Gawain is continuing to kind of question Elaine and now Egwene and Nynaeve and trying to find out where they've been these past few months because he says that Elaine won't tell him anything about it.
I mean, apparently, feel like she should have had a backstory. She should have had a backup story ready for the two of them.
Oh, you mean the Amyrlin? Like, what are you going to tell people?
No, I feel like Elaine should have had, like, a lie ready if she's not ready to tell them what actually happened, you know?
Yeah, and it does kind of surprise me, actually, that now that you say that the Amyrlin didn't say, like, you obviously can't tell people where you were, so what are you going to tell them? And, like, make them come up with their story in front of her.
Yeah.
Anyway. So apparently convincing Queen Morghese to let them stay in Tarvalon was an experience they never want to repeat. Gawain says, I've never heard of a queen sending her own sons to the headsman, but Mother sounded ready to make an exception if we don't bring you home safely. So Morghese is a very strong-willed woman with, it sounds like, maybe a little bit of a temper. And that kind of describes Elaine from some of the ways that we've seen her as well. And Nynaeve reminds them that Morghese's commands carry no weight in Tarvalon, and she says, for now, get the fuck out of my room.
Damn.
In probably that exact, those exact words. Good to see you. Get the fuck
Goodbye.
Out. Okay, so Gawain says, okay, fine, we'll get out, but I'm still going to need to know where you were because Mom is going to keep asking me. He doesn't call her Mom. But I need to know what to tell her. You owe me that much. And Nynaeve is like, she doesn't owe you anything. Now this is my room. Get the fuck out. And basically says, I know you didn't ask permission to be in the Accepted's quarters, so you have to be out of this room by the time I count to three. And they're like, kind of like, surely she's not going to do that. And she's like, one. And then Gallaud walks up and starts kind of cradling Egwene's hand and talking sweetly to her. And Nynaeve goes, two. And they both kind of start to glower at her as they're like making their way toward the door, but kind of stalling a little bit and being dicks about it. And she's like, thr. And then they run out and close the door behind them.
There's like smoke.
And Elaine kind of like, yeah. If it were a cartoon, they would have like run through the door and there would have been a silhouette of their body shapes.
Exactly.
Turns out you don't need permission to be in the Accepted quarters, but Nynaeve tricked them because she's a badass.
She knows.
And Elaine starts talking about how much she hates Gallaud because he always does what's right, no matter who it may hurt. She says, he will not tell a lie, even a small one, or break a rule. If he turns you in for breaking one, there isn't the slightest spite in it. He seems sad you could not live up to his standards, if anything, but that doesn't change the fact that he will turn you in. I think it's so interesting that even attributes that we think of as really valuable and things that are important, like honesty and trustworthiness, they become really abhorrent in excess, right? Like any quality, no matter how wonderful we think it is, if that overrides everything else, then it becomes a really abhorrent character quality.
Yeah, I mean, if you're one-dimensional in any way, even if it's good, that's not really lending yourself for any kind of movement or growth or change.
True, true. And also, kind of an amount of dickishness, because it sort of ignores the fact that, you know, you might tell small little lies to not hurt somebody's feelings or, you know, make them feel better or whatever it is. And so basically it's like, my integrity matters more than your feelings, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's insensitive.
It is insensitive. Thank you. So Elaine tells Egwene to stop mooning over Galad because Gawain is totally in love with her and, you know, says, you would never know it, though, because Gawain would never stand in Galad's way when he's interested in somebody. And apparently this is because Galad saved his life when they were children, and that translates to a lifetime of not cock-blocking.
I think it's a brotherly thing.
It's a fair trade.
I was going to say, like, you know, it's nice to
also that.
Think of your brother.
Nynaeve is like, well, if you're done talking about boys, would you like to get back to the matter of what the Amyrlin had to talk to us alone about? And they're both like, right. Egwene tries to stop her, though, because she says, you know, we were ordered not to talk to anyone about this, including Elaine. And Nynaeve is like, I don't give a fuck. We need somebody else in this who hasn't had a target painted on them and hasn't had killers attempt their lives. She'll kind of be our sort of secret weapon or our, you know, unknown advantage.
Our dummy that we're going to throw out in front of us before before we do things.
Come life, come shield, come human shield.
Exactly, human shield.
Oh boy, I never thought about that. That's funny. Elaine is Nynaeve's human shield. So Nynaeve also says, another thing, I believe that Amyrlin means to let Matt die. And Egwene says, but Varen had said that the Amyrlin was going to heal him. And Nynaeve says, Varen said the Amyrlin would see to him. That is not the same thing. And the Amyrlin avoided saying yes or no when I asked her. Maybe she has not made her mind up. Mm. So that's just, you know, one of those examples of how Aes Sedai have the obligation to tell the truth, but they can find creative wording to not necessarily give clear answers to things.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, I've been seeing this, her dancing around this topic.
Nynaeve goes to her closet and gets her herbs and says that perhaps she can heal him. And Egwene and Elaine are like, but Varen couldn't do it. Varen and Moraine together couldn't do it. And she says, well, they keep telling me that I'm going to be the most powerful channeler in 1,000 years, so perhaps I can manage it. And they kind of talk about trying to combine their abilities and channel together, which later on we learn is called linking. And they start to head toward the door when, bang, it pops open. And did you look ahead to see who it is?
No, I did not.
So you don't know who it is. Okay.
No.
But an Aes Sedai walks in, and RJ says that she enters as though this was her room and they were the interlopers, and they curtsy deeply, hiding their dismay that they're being delayed, and that is the end of the chapter. Who do you think it is?
I don't know. It's not going to be anyone that they're, like, very familiar with, I guess. It's not going to be anyone that we're very familiar with. It's not going to be, like, Swan or Moraine or Varen.
It's not one of those three, but it's definitely someone we've met.
I wonder if maybe it's Leanne? Maybe it's one of the ones we met from the first book, or when they first get to Tarvalon. I don't have a guess, because who else do we really know? Elida? Maybe Elida.
That's another option.
That's my guess. Elida is my guess. I'm going to go with that.
Okay.
Because where is she?
I'll put 500 Alex on Elida.
And I have to say, I did not say this in previous books when you've asked about characters I'm really interested in. I'm very, very, very curious about Elida now.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Ever since we know that Morgaze has, like, left her behind, I just want to know.
Yeah. Well, not banished, but yeah. Yeah, agreed. I won't say whether this is Elida or not, but I will say we definitely see a fair amount of Elida at various points, and she's definitely an interesting character.
Yeah, I'm curious. She seems like some sort of outlier in some way. You know what I mean? Because she's not in the tower. Mm-hmm. She's not, you know, with the Shan Chan. She's kind of just been on her own. So maybe she's Black Asha. Yeah. Anyway, let me stop.
What was your favorite part of these chapters?
This is hard. I guess, do you have one in mind?
I mean, I kind of like the general tone of both chapters and how it's just sort of Sarah McLachlan building a mystery. I think that probably my favorite moments are the kind of furtive, I'm going to see if I can find another F word, feverish conversations between Elaine and, or sorry, Egwene and Nynaeve as they're kind of leaving the Amyrlin's chambers, as they're both sort of like digesting and trying to figure out what the other one thinks about this and what's happening. I just kind of like that tension, I think, is probably going to be my favorite part of these chapters.
Yeah, I guess I would have to say my favorite moment that's standing out for me right now is when Egwene and Nynaeve are talking, kind of similar moment for you, but when I feel like the roles have sort of reversed a little bit in this conversation, where Egwene is like, I don't care what they said that we're supposed to do. I don't care if it means that, you know, I can't be an Aes Sedai. And Nynaeve is like, I'm following the rules. I'm keeping my head down. Yeah. I'm following the rules. I'm going to be inconspicuous and I'm going to do things my way. But yeah, I'm going to become an Aes Sedai and I'm going to get real strong. So I meant it. I like that like little
I'm going to get real strong.
I'm going to get real big and strong. And I'm going to
eat my Cheerios every morning and I'm going to show everyone.
Watch out. Here I come.
Awesome.
Oh, by the way, I found my notes.
Okay, before you read that, I just want to mention the word awesome because we were talking about Eddie Izzard. Mm-hmm. And Eddie has this whole shtick. So she talks about how, you know, if you look at the word awesome, it literally, like, the definition is something, we have encountered something that is so amazing and unbelievable that we are literally awestruck. Like, our jaws are open and we almost cannot comprehend that which we are seeing. And you in America, you take that word and you go, awesome hot dogs.
I've read something like that similarly about the word epic.
P.S. Have you ever heard of Joseph Campbell? Is I'm pretty sure an author, and also he has like a mini series that's called something like the monomyth. And have you ever heard of the monomyth, which is like the idea that there's a specific trajectory that all characters go through that is similar on like the hero's journey?
Oh,
I think it might be called Hero with a Thousand Faces.
I've heard of the hero's journey, that phrase, before, like in books and, well, in publications,
movies?
Yeah. I guess movies. I'm trying to say, like, those long...
Anyway, it is the hero with a thousand faces, and it is the concept of the monomyth, which is, again, the mythic narrative of a kind of great story or hero's journey. And one of the other... So I recently was on another Wheel of Time podcast. I guested on Twotcast, TWOTcast. Mm-hmm. They invited me to an annual event they do called the Watt Royal Rumble, where essentially they presented different characters from the series, and then you have to sort of tell the story of them doing a cage match to the death with whoever else is still in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are various, like, sets of rules, like nobody can channel, so it's not like, so it's kind of like a more level playing field. It's just like physical ability, no weapons, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that was fun. Thanks for having me on. Also on there were a couple other Wheel of Time podcasts, and one of them is called A Hero's Journey. Oh, I think it's called A Hero's Journey. Let me just double check. Yes, A Hero's Journey. And they are a podcast where they debate a book to see like how well it fits into the narrative of the hero's journey. And they include the Wheel of Time books in that. So I just thought that was kind of a fun a clever way to approach the series, and I might go check that out. I'll have to see if it would spoil anything for you. Okay. What were we talking about?
We both said our favorite. Oh, I wanted to tell you, I found my note about the,
yes.
Okay. So
the Galad casting.
When you first asked me and you didn't tell me who it was for yet, and you just said like a character that's going to be the hottest guy, I had said, Jake Gyllenhaal, Sterling K. Brown, or Chris Pratt. And then when I read the description for the character, I had said Zac Efron.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that would not be a bad choice, honestly.
You know, I feel like he's...
Sterling K. Brown is the dad from This Is Us, right?
Yes.
Okay, he's cute.
I think he's so hot. Everything I've ever seen him in. And he's got such a deep bass voice. I can't handle it.
Yeah. Well, if you would like to help our podcast grow, the best thing you can do is to rate and review our podcast on whatever platform you are using to listen to our episodes.
Yeah, and tell your friends... Tell your family, tell the world, tell them about us. Word of mouth is the best way we get around, and we like to get around, so tell people about us.
Our social media is CoolStoryPod on Instagram and CoolStoryPod1 on Twitter, and you can also email us at CoolStoryPod@gmail.com. We love getting emails, so feel free to send us a note and even just say hi.
Yeah, and speaking of things we love, as Anna was saying, we love collaborating. I would love to find more collaborators out there who are spoiler free. So anyone out there who does any kind of podcast or show similar to ours, or anyone you think we just have a good vibe with, let us know. Contact us, contact them. Let's get it going.
Well, we will see you next week, and goodbye.
Thanks a lot. Bye.